Hey everyone, welcome back to Sprint Race. My name is Emma Ridgway and today we're going to be talking about the Monaco E-Prix. This episode features interviews from the drivers in the Formula E paddock from the Monaco E-Prix weekend. I am very excited to share them with you. Some cool things that they said and the race itself, I really enjoyed it. So let's get started. Now in Formula E, renowned for its doubleheaders, I personally love that Monaco is just a one-off weekend. We all know that Monaco is special in Formula One. It's the race that everybody wants to win. And in Formula E, it's no different. I feel like it's that one race of the year that in many ways, the championship is almost put to the side because they really want to win this race. For me personally, Monaco was the very first Formula E race that I attended as part of this podcast, so is very special to me anyway. I've been to Monaco a few times, so I feel like I know the city, but this time around, I feel like I was really able to make the most of it. As for the drivers, I said that they all wanted to win this race. One driver in particular who's been doing quite well this year, although the last few races, he's had a little bit of bad luck, shall we say, was Jake Dennis. Jake Dennis is, in my mind, one of the title contenders for this season. Here's what he had to say before the Monaco E-Prix.
I'm excited to be here, you know. It's Monaco, it's the biggest, probably the most iconic race of the season for Formula E. So, yeah, busy schedule coming up tomorrow. We have everything in one day, and it's been a while since we've done that. I think it was probably this time last year. So, all the practice, qualifying in the race. Hopefully the weather holds off. It looks pretty good now. So I was a bit sceptical before, but, yeah. Excited to get going and hopefully we can obviously do well. You know, and the meetings start at like 5 a.m. tomorrow, so it's a long day. And you come to like the start of the race and you feel like you've already been driving for 3 days non-stop. But it's just even more important to sort of hit the ground running in FP1. You know, the usual races you have overnight to analyse and, you know, really go into depth with the data. Whereas now, if you're struggling in FP1, you don't really have time to, you know, indulge in all the data and try and fix it. So, yeah, we just need to make sure we're fast in FP1 and it should be quite a good day.
What he said was particularly interesting, and to be honest, I didn't think of it until he said it, which is it's unusual for us to, in the Formula E paddock, to have basically 2 days without racing. Thursday is a media day, Friday is a media day, but then in the afternoon, there's normally the first practice session. And then, you know, drivers tend to spend the evening and a bit of the morning going over the data from FP1, gives them a little bit of extra preparation. But in Monaco, the day is pretty much all just squeezed into that one day on the Saturday. And so from 7:30 in the morning, when free practice one starts, until about 4:30, 5 p.m. in the afternoon, it's pretty much flat out, excuse the pun, from start to finish in terms of practice one. And then immediately after practice one, there's the autograph sessions. So the drivers essentially get out of the cars, sign like hundreds of autographs for fans, then immediately go back in the cars for FP2. There's probably an hour before qualifying, and that hour is the time in which they need to essentially analyze all of the data from practice one and practice two. So it's really, really tight. I was really interested to see how the race would be in Monaco, given that it's the hardest circuit to overtake on, given the fact that these Gen 3 cars are allowing for so many overtakes. This is what the Neo 333 driver, Sergio Sette Câmara, had to say about Monaco.
Monaco is special, but it's a track that everyone knows so well. I think it will come down to where each team lines up, because all the drivers are driving in a similar level here. You know, you go to a new track like Sao Paulo, somebody could adapt much faster than others, like the track, but when you've been racing there in your junior career for 5, 6, 7 years, some drivers here even 10 years in a row, it kind of equals out to everyone, and I really think the more efficient cars are going to stand out here in the race, so probably the Jaguars and the Porsches.
I agree with him. I think we've been to so many new tracks this year. There is a little bit of, you know, leveling the playing field, but everybody knows Monaco. Everyone knows Monaco so well that they could probably, you know, drive this circuit with their eyes closed. And that's kind of how it played out in qualifying as well. There were some drivers who ended up qualifying really high. For example, the Nissans of Norman Nato and Sascha Fenestras, Jake Hughes in the McLaren as well. Drivers that haven't maybe been towards the front for, you know, maybe 7 or 8 races now. If you remember early races, Fenestras and Jake Hughes were qualifying quite high, but like since then, everyone else seems to have caught up. So I think that that level playing field meant that drivers and teams and cars that maybe aren't quite so high up normally had a really good opportunity to get to the front. In general, I felt like talking to the drivers in the paddock before the race and also in the press conference as well, I felt like qualifying in general wasn't as important. But what was interesting was post-race, and I'll share some of the specific comments later on, I think some of the drivers maybe underestimated the importance of qualifying because it had a little bit of a knock-on effect that I don't think many drivers were expecting. I haven't yet spoken about Nick Cassidy, who won the last race in Berlin. And if you saw on my Instagram, I said that, you know, he's kind of been this consistent, quietly confident driver who has basically been creeping up the pecking order. Before the race, he was just 4 points behind Pascal Wehrlein, who has been leading from race one, leading the championship from that opening race. And I think people were a little bit surprised to see Nick Cassidy within reaching distance of leading the championship. He qualified down in ninth, and within the opening few laps of the race, Nick Cassidy managed to make up, I think, 4 positions and did an incredible move around the hairpin, which you never see, by the way. Like, you know, the hairpin is not a place to overtake. But at one point, I think he just braked so late, went around the outside of like 2, nearly 3 cars, and then just cut back inside as they went into the tunnel. It was an amazing move. I was watching it just in front of one of the main grandstands, and the noise when that happened, when people saw it on the screen, it was just this lovely appreciation of the move that they saw. Unlike previous races, the first 7 laps of the Monaco E-Prix didn't involve a huge amount of racing for the lead or changes for the lead. And I think that was just due to the nature of it being in Monaco. I did wonder if, you know, the Envision of Cassidy and the Jaguar of Mitch Evans, who are, you know, notably closely matched, would eventually make their way up to the front. They did, through a mixture of, you know, really great overtakes, as I said, but also choosing to do the attack modes at the right time. Jake Hughes, for example, made an attack move. He was up, I think, leading the race, went down into P4, and then just got overtaken and unfortunately fell backwards. Jake Dennis for Avalanche Andretti, who you heard from earlier, also managed to make his way up. And then it ended up being a bit of a 2-way battle for the lead between Nick Cassidy and Mitch Evans. And in all honesty, that was kind of what I expected to see. Jake Dennis was also there, but I don't think he could quite catch the 2 leading cars in time. But in my opinion, those 3 drivers right now are the strongest on the grid. For the last few races, particularly the ones that Jaguar have won, like in Berlin and Sao Paulo, they've been really, really good as a team at deciding when to move up the pecking order, when to make that move for the lead in such a tricky circumstance right now where going for the lead can sometimes be detrimental due to the slipstream advantage. Unfortunately for Mitch Evans, he was caught completely off guard by a pretty audacious move from Cassidy, and it completely caught them by surprise. For the next few laps, Evans really tried to get past, but at this point in the race, they're essentially flat out. There's no more like conservation, energy conservation. And unfortunately, the race then finished behind the safety car. And that final move that Cassidy made on Evans ended up being the decisive one. Cassidy won the Monaco E-Prix, and Evans, for the 3rd year in a row, came 2nd. Jake Dennis came 3rd in a top 3, which I think was very well deserved. Before I talk about Mitch Evans, a note on Nick Cassidy. I feel like he doesn't talk about himself in the way that maybe some of the other drivers do. Maybe this is just my opinion, and my perception of how he talks to the media, like myself. It's refreshing when I see drivers, you know, openly talk about their confidence and say things like, you know, I do deserve to win this race, or I know that I can go for that move. You know, they have confidence, and, you know, that's a very good thing, in my opinion. But Cassidy, whenever I've spoken to him, I feel like he collectively sums up his opinion in line with his team. Like, everything is about, like, me and the team, we as the team. Even when I managed to speak to him about, you know, him being in title contention, I felt like he was substantially downplaying his chances in terms of, like, the hype and things like that. Listen to what he has to say about the team.
Yeah, and I'm trying to tell our team that, to be honest. It's super nice to have good races, and it means our partners are happy, our team are motivated. They put in such long hours and a lot of work pre-season with these cars, and so if you're having good results and you're in the fight, it just makes them feel like it's worth it. So it's more on that side where it's pretty cool. For me, it doesn't change too much. There's too many races to go. And I think this championship's so crazy. It can go from amazing to bad pretty quickly. So that's it.
But that being said, when he made that move around the outside of the hairpin, that, you know, that amazing move that took two and nearly three cars, it's clear that he does have that confidence. I spoke to Mitch afterwards, and I could tell he was bitterly disappointed. It's a race that everyone wants to win, but nobody has come closer than Mitch Evans so many times. This particular race probably hurts more than the rest of them because he had that lead, and unfortunately, he let it slip. I spoke to him after the race, and this is what he had to say.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting at that point. I think if I defended hard for that lap and the next lap, it would have been mine today. But I wasn't expecting it because I had an energy advantage on him. So I feel credit to Nick. He rolled the dice and it paid off. So yeah, just a little bit disappointed about that. I think we could have done a better job collectively as a team, me 100% included, to get the win today. But look, it's still good points. It could have easily gone a lot worse, so I have to look at the bigger picture. Look, I've got high expectations of myself, I've got high standards, and when you know you could have done it and it just missed out through just a few couple of choices, it's annoying. But look, there's a lot of other guys that have worse days than me, so I can't be too bitter or disappointed. And I'm super happy for Nick. He did a great job today. But yeah, I feel like my first one here just slipped away again.
Next year.
Oh yeah, I did that last year, but anyway.
Next year, I said at the end. I mean it. I do think that he can come back and win. I think that when he does, that victory will be, you know, even sweeter. But it must be frustrating. It's interesting to see that he has these extremely high standards of himself. You can see that in the way that he approaches himself in the interviews, in the races as well. And ultimately, he's on the podium in Monaco, and it's just not good enough for him. He wanted to win that race, and he wants to win the championship. But now that Cassidy won that race, he's actually leading the championship now. It's an interesting dynamic because the two of them are very good friends. They've known each other since they were children. They both grew up together in New Zealand, and they're in very similar cars. Because that move caught Mitch Evans out, I wonder now if for future races, he'll be racing a little bit harder with the Envision drivers. If you recall, in the last episode, I said that there was a radio message from Mitch Evans where he said, "I don't want to work with the Envision drivers anymore," after he wasn't let back in after doing an attack mode. We're getting towards the business end of the season now, and we have two very, very close competitors. I also should not rule out Jake Dennis, who, again, after, you know, having an amazing start to the season, went on a bit of a dip and is now getting those results again. He said he was excited for the race beforehand. After the race, this is what he had to say.
Yeah, I'm relieved. You know, everyone wants to make the podium here and do really well, and I think we've done that considering where we started. Kept it clean, no damage for the boys to fix tonight, which is important, and came away with 15 points and then the fastest lap, so yeah, very happy. I think as a team we can try and understand the race a little bit better, of when's the right point to, you know, maybe lead. I think, like, especially in vision, have the best number or strategy or software to figure that out right now. And
is that what it is?
It must be, yeah, because Nick always seems to take the lead at the perfect point and then win the race, and by that point it's impossible to pass. So it seems like he's got a really good understanding of when that is. But nevertheless, you know, we had a great car. That was really one of the biggest things, is to come away with some big points today.
I mentioned earlier that a few drivers had qualified higher, and you know, there were some surprises there. I don't know necessarily who he was talking to, but in both the press conference and during the media pen afterwards, Jake Dennis spoke about something called wacky tactics. He was referring to drivers in front of him who were playing some sort of, in his quote, wacky strategy, and you know, that became detrimental to the race. Qualifying, as I said, seems to be something that the drivers are not worrying about as much as they were in previous seasons because of the ability to move forward throughout the race. But the flip side of that, if they're not qualifying high enough, then other drivers are. And those drivers might not necessarily be in the title fight. They might just be there trying to get a good haul of points. And I think these drivers that are maybe in, you know, the better car, or they are fighting for that title, they're getting a little bit frustrated at them. So, you know, as much as you can move forward through the field, if you have to pass drivers that you would prefer not to pass, then ultimately, you know, you need to qualify higher. This is what Jake Dennis had to say about that.
Ultimately, I just need to qualify better and start in the top five. You know, I don't need to qualify in pole, like it's pointless in these races at the moment. So, yeah, we just need to try and start in the duels. That's really the biggest thing for us right now. It was possible today, but I messed up and made a mistake in qualifying. So I feel like the boys did a good enough job to give me that car today, and hopefully they can do the same in Jakarta.
So a lot to take away from the Monaco E-Prix weekend. We have a new championship leader with Nick Cassidy. We have Mitch Evans missing out again, but still getting a really good haul of points. We have Jake Dennis bouncing back again. And a lot of lessons learned from this weekend, whether it be still qualifying in a higher position to avoid tangling with cars that you wouldn't like to normally mess with, whether it be maybe going for that more risky move. So lots to take away. And all of those, I think, set us up for a really interesting conclusion to this season. We're over halfway now. Next up is going to be a doubleheader in a month's time. So a bit of time now to rest and reset. As for me, I don't know if I'm going to be back in the paddock until probably London, which happens to be the final two races of the season. So that'll be really exciting. But as Formula E travels a little bit further afield around the world, I will be watching from the comfort of my own home. So, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. See you next time.